Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Stevie, Letsike is an Access Chapter 2 Executive Director who is here to talk to us about all things politics and all things, everything else under the sun, especially at this time. Thank you so much for making time for us. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening to you and to the listeners of Kaya FM. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Oh, really? Thank you so much for making time for us. I just want your take. We really are very close to the elections now. And you've obviously been watching the landscape of how things have moved. And it wasn't so long ago when everybody was saying, well, the ANC is not going to make it. And look how much they've come out. Guns blazing, you know, obviously trying to go for the finish line. Your take on all that we've seen, obviously also the emergence of the MK party. How are you reading these elections?
I think for me, you know, elections are always time and period for debate. You know, there's always going to be, of course, perceptions about, you know, which one will emerge as a party and, you know, that will go into power. But I think, you know, South Africa, you know, it's a very unique country, very rich history, you know, that stems from quite a number of inequalities and injustices. And every time we engage the period of elections, there's always the ethos of where do we come from, where are we, and where are we going. But I think the big part of it, it's also about the kind of governance we need and the kind of governance we deserve, you know, in a country like ours, where it's really spent, you know, from dynamics and challenges. And no doubt, we are a country that is met by many challenges. Even the government, you know, that is ANC-led, no, if one has to reflect in these 5 years, I mean, government was confronted by many challenges. You know, you're taking into dealing with a system and transition of what accountable governance is, and which is what South Africans have called for. And I think President Ramaphosa, you know, has been dealing with quite a number of issues. But you're also dealing with the public health threat that we've had. No one was expecting it, COVID, let alone we've been dealing with a number of epidemics and public health threats such as TB, HIV, and so forth. So you are actually dealing with social fabrics. But I think where you look at elections, we need to really be fair. Mm. We need to really be strong with our voices as South Africans to say, this is what we want. And if we believe a party such as ANC or a party of any kind really should be in power, our responsibility, which is what is in the Constitution, and the obligation and the right that we have, which is the right to vote and the right to put a government into power, is that obligation that South Africans must exercise. And ours is the responsibility. We can't be bystanders as South Africans to say we are not going to vote. We must, because it's an obligation and a responsibility that was fought for, that we must never take for granted.
You know, when you go and speak to people on the ground, and I'm sure you've been doing that work yourself, and of course there's a lot coming at them now with the number of political parties that are throwing their messages at them. Do you get the sense that people are enthusiastic about these elections, and have they made up their mind?
Well, I think there are a number of views. I think people have never been so much drawn into what really takes place into the daily life. I think there is a huge segment of society that has been interested, but there's also a large population cohort that has really not been so much actively paying attention on what politics and what government and so forth. And I think people have really isolated themselves in their own participation. And I think this participation is what also has costed us. Now, what you're really then looking at, people are then dealing with the impact of not of things that have not taken place, or the frustration, or the climate, or the environment. But there's also a very strong voice that is also emerging, and sometimes we must not invisibilize this voice. The people of this country that have actually also said, I have been helped by, you know, the kind of services that has been making us leave. You have others who are disgruntled, who are frustrated, whose systems that are supposed to be working, they're not. But you also equally have people who are saying, I have been vulnerable. The inequalities have gotten us where we are, and really I've benefited from the services that have been provided. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to balance this message of what has worked and what has not worked. But no one, you know, is disagreeing to say that we can do better and we can do it faster as a country.
The element of trust. Do people believe what's been sold to them? Steve?
You know, there is trust, there's a mistrust, but there's also hope.
Yeah.
And I think if we actually get to that mode to say, 8 days from now, we are going into elections. And we must not go into elections with a mistrust. All political parties that are contesting, in fact, what we must instill in the public is a hope. So when you go vote, you go to vote with a hope to actually strengthen, to prosper, to empower, to achieve. And that's what we need to go into elections with. You can't go with, when you go with a mistrust, there's an element that says that I'm voting, but I don't care. But when you vote and you're saying I'm caring and I'm hopeful and I'm going to be a very much active participant, and I think for me that is the spirit of elections. The people I'm engaging everywhere are going into election to saying I am voting because I'm an active citizen of this country. Some are saying yes, I voted before, I have been frustrated, but this is my hope going into voting. That over 25 million people registered must go out in their numbers to vote and to vote the government that they believe should actually uphold and strengthen that work. And that's what I believe in.
But what we've seen, Steve, is that those who have been the most disappointed in the government of the day, and I'm not necessarily speaking about this administration, I'm saying since we've been voting, have for a while then decided to stay home and feeling like, look, you know, the people that have disappointed me were the people I trusted. I don't want to trust anyone else. In fact, they would say, polls are, not even polls, research has told us that people are saying it's not even so much about party X or Y. I just don't trust the system at all. I don't trust politics at all to solve my day-to-day problems. Actually, you know what? I've got bigger problems and none of these people get it, so I'm staying home.
I think the people who have been disappointed before and who have been frustrated, right? They have, and they've got a right to feel that way. And we must not delegitimize anyone who feels disappointed because it has been their experience. I think where we also need to be fair, and I'm really now in the context of what really constitutes a active participant or citizenry in that manner, is the thinking head of the system, the oppressive system that we come from. You know, I was listening to former President Thabo Mbeki the other day.
Yes.
When he was doing his 30 years reflection.
Mm-hmm.
President Thabo Mbeki says when the ANC came into power, you know, there was just a desk all documents, all of these things. There was quite a lot of things that were taken away by the apartheid government that seems to have kept certain things into secrecy. That means when you are setting up, a system, then you are setting up a new system, you are setting up a new governance, and you are setting up a new governance which now becomes a government of inclusion, of diversity, of that is not taking just one element, because we are not homogeneous as society, but also you are taking into consideration intersectional issues. And those intersectional issues are influenced by a number of things: race, class, age, geographical locations, and all of this. Because in the past system, used to benefit people of a particular race. Now, for you to then do that, it will take long, because others, even in the community and in society, will reject the new system. And it does not mean in 1994, when the ANC came into power, it was not rejected. There were people who were already leaving the country. There were people who were not interested to support South Africans because it was going to be led by black people. And there were people even who still sabotaged. So I really want us to find the frustration, but also find a good reasoning and facts to say that even in the 30 years, what has been good and what has been bad? And in the good, are we able to sustain the good? And in the bad, are we able to eradicate the bad? Whether we're talking about corruption, which is the biggest part that has led us here, and that corruption is what we get rid of. Are the systems strong and efficient to deal with it? Can we then really also, all of us as society, because it's not only just government responsibility to deal with corruption, it's even in the fabric of people, just by bribing a police officer or a traffic officer, that level of corruption from and the participants of that. So I think we have that responsibility to say that in our frustration, what are we prepared to do as South Africans to restore prosperity, to restore a just country, but also to restore peace? The issues around gender-based violence, the issues around hate crimes, these things, no matter the laws are introduced, but this is the social fabric. The person who commits crime, who's a perpetrator, how can we reduce this toxic element? How can we prevent it? How can we protect people so that we don't actually have to always say we are frustrated and we are expecting a response or a proactiveness, but we are actually preventing these kind of elements that contribute to a reduction in our economy or social fabric or even our political existence as a country.
So race has become that thing that for a little while, but I mean ever so little, was the kind of thing that we didn't want to really confront. And for some time, we really wanted to have this rainbow nation, and the rainbow being one unit, and it was nice. But clearly South Africans are voting along racial lines. Am I reading it wrong? Because as you hear them speak, I mean, just a few minutes ago, you can hear racism comes through a lot. Racism comes through in how they see politicians, how they see the parties, how they see themselves being represented.
You know, you are raising a very important issue around how we need to examine the voter, the kind of voters that are registered, but also the kind of voters that we must attract in countries and in society. Indeed, race, ethnic disparities, or even existence plays a big role. But it also plays a big role not only just in the voter aspect of things. It plays a big role in the socio-economic resource and rootedness of what exists in communities. So you're going to find the expression of that in the differences when it comes to the electoral participation. And you're not misreading it, because what is demonstrated, you know, a strong effect of the unreal of personal background characteristics of individuals, you're going to find it in political participation. But you need to go even beyond just race and look at some of the grounds of age, sex, education, and even residential or geographical stability. I black people were segregated. White people lived in a particular towns or farms and so forth. Now you have integrated. And you know, when you integrate people or people taking away some of these structural barriers that existed in the past, people are not starting from scratch. So there's never been equality amongst different types of races. And yet we are expecting all these races to perform in the same or to give us the same outcome when there are systematic oppressions that still exist. So even when you go to elections, people aren't able to put away some of these struggles that they have experienced in the past. Now, you say in a country that is supposed to be non-sexist and non-racial, how do you then find expression of racial, integrity amongst various political parties? And you can still see it because it's the very same systems that are still being fought that some political parties have not been able to integrate. But if you take five or three top political parties and you say, let's read the manifesto. Is this manifesto speaking to me? Can it speak to me? And does it elevate a non-racial, but also it doesn't repair the injustice of the past? And if people can't find that in the manifestos, they must be able to decide on which political party serves best.
Do you feel that we are probably regressing a bit with regards to tolerance? And I want to not necessarily put it at the doorstep of the people on the ground, but rather the leaders themselves. I don't know whether I'm reading the room correctly, but there seems to be a sense of intolerance, of acceptance of the other and making space for the other. And I don't know, I've spoken to a few politicians here who some indicate some concerns about outcomes of the elections and whether they feel their counterparts will actually accept those results. And I'm hearing that more from leaders than I am hearing from people on the ground.
You know, it's a fair comment or concern for you to elevate, about the level of intolerance. But I think the level of intolerance, you can even pick it up in the mushrooming. I mean, we seem to have this popcorn of political parties, and that if I don't agree with this one, I'm starting and I'm establishing a new one. And while people are entitled to it, because our constitution and our democracy, which was very much hard-earned, that when you have freedom of association, but we need to examine, we need to analyze this level of intolerance, that if I don't agree to this leader, I will then establish a new leadership platform. And that speaks to the level of maturity that we need to observe, but it also speaks to whether we care enough of the purpose of this freedom of association. Because to establish a political, and you say that you want to lead or you want to govern, and when many of them have belonged in the past into all these other old political parties, and they want to set up new ones, then you actually also have to question the kind of leadership, the kind of governance that they will present. And while I'm just possibly saying this, and which many and others may find it contradictory, but we must interrogate this thoroughly about what constitutes the level of intolerance and the kind of leadership. If people have failed to provide in their old or former spaces, what makes them think that they will give us a new thing and they will give us the right thing in the new parties? That must be examined very clearly.
I'm in conversation with Steve Letsike, who is Access Chapter 2 Executive Director. Steve, just maybe quickly, for those who are listening and who are not familiar with Access Chapter 2, just what Access Chapter 2 does and its mandate.
No, thank you so much. Access Chapter 2 is a human rights organization focusing on, you know, the rights of LGBTI persons, women and girls in their diversities. We provide legal support to the community for free. We also do have two sites in Pretoria and in Rustenburg that has health services. Our legal service is nationwide, but where we have two clinics is in Pretoria and in Rustenburg, providing health services, but also particularly to people living with HIV in particular. So, yeah, we are a human rights community-led organization that has been working in this country for many years, you know, that is supported to really respond to the social issues, particularly facing women, girls, and LGBT persons.
When you juxtapose what you experience and the work that you do and look at the kind of manifestos that we've been going through, I'm sure you've gone through quite a number of them, it sometimes strikes me how disconnected the manifestos are to real life, you know, almost not really understanding the lay of the land by what it is that they want to offer. Do people feel that these manifestos are talking to their problems?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, this is the concern that, you know, sometimes we find manifestos just dealing with the hot topics of the day,
exactly,
but really not, which are not necessarily looking at what is at the heart of the population development. And indeed, the biggest theme that runs across manifestos will be the issue of unemployment. Mm-hmm. Indeed, because it's an economic pressure. For a country to thrive, we want a healthy population that is working and so forth. And when you listen to different parties speak, you pick that up. But do these manifestos have a plan? That's a fundamental question, you know, that is very key. And I mean, you can take the ruling party and that the first priority of the ANC that says that first plan, restore the people who have jobs must continue to have these jobs. The second part is that you must then make sure that you develop additional new jobs. And then you can take DA and then you can take EFF and so forth. And I mean, even BUSA for that matter, that every household must be given a job. But the plan must be very clear. The plan must be very clear, because don't play with people's emotions. You must be able to say, these are the opportunities, these are the skills, these are the qualifications, but these are also some of the soft skills that people can use. That if you are not a job seeker, be a job creator, be a kind of opportunities that you can create in society. So I think some parties are just wishy-washy. And I don't want to lie, because I've read some of these manifestos and I was worried that, what the hell, these are not talking development issues. And whether these some of these parties are even linking to the international pressures. We have what we call the sustainable development goals. Are we responding to climate change? Are we responding to gender equality? Are we responding to education? Are we responding to water scarcity or crisis? Are we responding to energy and many of these? And if any of these don't speak to the existence in manifesto, don't try to sell a South African a dream we cannot deliver. Let's deliver a dream. That is learned experience, that is well researched, but also that is practical to say that this is where we can go, this is how we can do it, but this is your role, this is our role, and this is the government's role, and this is how we can actually thrive a country together.
I really appreciate you giving us time, Steve. We're going to make more time, especially when you're in studio, and we can dissect all of these nicely with you in studio and our listeners. I really appreciate it. Access Chapter 2 Executive Director Steve Letsike. Letsike is the person we are talking to just now. They are a human rights organization. They really advocate for wonderful work for young children, women, people who identify as LGBTQ plus communities, and so on. And they've been watching the elections, and they've highlighted a few things that they feel we must all be thinking about. But at the end of the day, they really are advocating it for everybody to go out on the 29th of May to vote, even though they're not happy, because I think many of us are not happy with many things. But that's what they do. Steve Letsike, thank you so much for your time.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.